Welcome to Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM KSLU. This is Experience Points. I am your host, MG. We started the whole thing off with Tiger by Neil Cicierega. It's Lemon Demon. It's the guy that did the Ultimate Destiny song way back in the day, in the early days of the internet, of the early days of YouTube, Flash Animations, Newgrounds, all that type of stuff. E-Bomb's World. Anybody remember E-Bomb's World? This, as I said, is Experience Points. We drop nerd and geek knowledge on you every Wednesday night from 9 to 10 p.m., with the exception of times in the past where we didn't do that. Specifically last week. Last Wednesday was I'm going to call it a snow day. It's really a storm day, I guess, in Louisiana because of the impending problems that may have resulted from Harvey, Hurricane Harvey at the time. Cat 4, man. Heart goes out to Houston. Everybody in Houston, all the nerds, all the geeks, all the sysadmins, and of course, everybody that's not any of those things in Houston, the recovery, man, I hope that the efforts are really good for you guys, because as someone who last August flooded, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, and you know, it is just so terrible. The infrastructure was in no way planned for it, so really, really bad. But yeah, last Wednesday we didn't have a show because of a closure by the school saying, hey, we can't get there, and I wasn't able to do anything remotely to kind of get everything ready for the show last week, so I'm sorry about that. But you know what, I got a pretty good one planned today, I think. So we're going to discuss a few things. We're going to get to two songs in a minute though, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the next big segment, what I've been doing though. If you want to check out all our previous audio, when and if I ever get around, I might just die before I do it, before I cut it all together and slice it down, we have all of our previous shows, or we will eventually have all of our previous shows hosted online at our website. That website is, ready for it, exppoints.com. Remember, always double tap that P. We also have a social media landing page at exppoints.com/social. There you can get Facebook, Google+, Twitter, YouTube, Steam community, all of that stuff. Like, subscribe, follow, do all of the verby things. And if you'd like to donate, we have PayPal and Patreon. Thank you very much. But we're also streamable on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Play Music podcasting services. So subscribe to those if you would like. Whenever we post things online, usually we don't post them right after they go live. It's right now, I think, 2 or 3 months after that. So things get busy, life happens, but I'll get around to it. You get the idea. We're going to cut two songs. Let's do Will of One, the 2013 remix by the Proto Men, and Tutorial Lab remix by George and Jonathan. I will catch you guys after these two songs with more information. This is the Experience Points radio show, exclusively on Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM, KSLU. Welcome back to the Experience Points radio show, exclusively on Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM KSLU. I'm your host, MG, and you just heard Tutorial Lab remix by George and Jonathan. And we opened the whole thing up with The Will of One, the 2013 remix from the Proto Men. I'm actually pretty sad because after the Light Up the Night Proto Men tour, I think that ended in June 5th in Kansas City, they don't have anything on the books for the rest of the year, which hopefully means, and I'm gonna cross all my fingers and all my toes and some body parts that you don't want to know about, that they're in the studio and they're working and finalizing Act 3. I'm really, really hoping that that's what's going on right now. If not, please, if you're listening, I know they listen to the show. I talked to them about it one time. Guys, get in the studio. Just, you know, stop the show. Go into the studio. Work on Act 3, please. This is historically the segment of the show where we talk about what I did last week. And since the storm kind of had me out, I actually did a lot of things, though it doesn't really seem like I did a lot of things, because making the notes for the show, I only have like 4 or 5 things down on my notes. So I'm going to go ahead and start off with a little bit of backstory. A while back, I bought an Oculus Rift. I went ahead and I dove into VR, and I think Summer of Rift was $400. And for $400, you get the touch controls, 2 sensors, the Oculus Rift headset, and 5 games, I want to say. But there's a bunch of free experiences out there that you can also kind of partake in. I started playing some of the games, and I didn't dislike them, but I felt that the best game at the time, maybe even still now, in the genre, was Elite Dangerous. I'd play Elite Dangerous, I'd hook up the Oculus, and I would just be, it would do head tracking. Didn't even really use the touch controls, though. There was a really cool First Contact sort of tech demo that I enjoyed, but you know, other than that, I didn't really enjoy it. And I haven't played a ton of Robo Recoil or Ripcoil or whatever Squall, whatever it's called. I haven't played a lot of the other games that came with the pack, but other than like the VR Lab from Valve and Google Earth and a few other things, I haven't really enjoyed a lot of the touch control full VR experience. I always felt like I was going to fall over and like maybe hurt something, like, you know, crush my dog or run into my monitor, my nice, you know, 21:9 aspect ratio monitor, or punch my computer and break the side panel or something, or hurt my hand or break the controllers. So I'm very hesitant on doing that. And Elite Dangerous is kind of nice because I can kind of just sit down and play with the joysticks and the throttle, and that's it. I don't really have to get out of the chair, so I know where everything is at all times, and I don't have to extend my range of motion very much. But then I got a game called Lone Echo. It was Lone Echo, and then the single-player side of it, the multiplayer side of it's called Echo Arena, and I wasn't really sure what to think. I've heard good things about Lone Echo. I heard that it was a genre-defining sort of game, the first of its kind with VR, and it was made by Ready at Dawn, and I can't remember off the top of my head what Ready at Dawn does, but I know I liked some of the games that they have made, some of the experiences that they have made. I want to say they maybe did... Nah, they didn't do Heavenly Sword. That's weird. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Playing Lone Echo, you play Jack, which is an Echo robot, Echo unit, which is sort of like a worker droid, a drone. But Jack, this specific Echo unit, is sort of, I guess, specialized with human contact because you are the robotic component of a mining rig around the moons of Saturn, or around Saturn, rather, the rings of Saturn, to Captain Olivia Rhodes, the human counterpart to Jack on board the Kronos 2 station. And you're just there. It's like an industrial mining vessel. At the end of Olivia Rhodes's tenure, Jack is going to inherit this, and she's going to go off, and Jack is sort of maybe a little remorseful. Again, Jack doesn't necessarily have feelings. It maybe is just sort of like a really advanced chatbot at this point, but over the course of the game, Jack really does sort of come into his own as being sort of almost sentient or relatively sentient character as some really bad stuff happens, and you know, you have to kind of go and save Olivia or do things for Olivia out there. The cool thing about this game is that it takes place in zero gravity. So games like VR, Fallout VR, Doom VR, Skyrim VR, any game through Lab or Steam VR, you use this teleportation mechanic. It's not exclusive to those games, but it really comes out in those games where the teleportation mechanic, effectively, you throw a grenade, and the grenade is effectively your position where you're going to teleport to, which is okay when you get used to it, but it is sort of game-breaking in a game like Fallout or Doom that prides, at least in Doom's case, prides itself on really fast movement and combat, sort of just ridiculously hyper-fast movement and combat. In Fallout, it just sort of takes away from the experience, because if you don't have room scale and you don't have a good setup, you have to like press a button to rotate your character around more than, I guess, 15 or 20 degrees because of the head tracking. So in Lone Echo, it fixes this sort of movement mechanic conundrum by eliminating it completely. You still have to press a button to rotate, but you're able to sort of glide through zero gravity by grabbing onto the walls or grabbing onto handles and pulling yourself across and letting go at the right time, sort of as if you were actually in space. I would assume. I've never been in outer space, but it seems plausible. They do such a good job with the movement mechanic. They also add in these tiny little thrusters on Jack's wrists and on the back of his head. So whenever you look in a direction, you can push a button and kind of fire your jetpack off and go in that direction. You have sort of retro thrusters to kind of slow yourself down. And then you have micro adjustments on your wrist to kind of move around and point yourself in whatever direction. I played a couple hours of that game, maybe 3 or 4 hours of the game. And then I stopped playing the game. Things got difficult. I did go on a vacation, so that contributed to me not playing video games for a while. But when I came back, I picked the game back up, and I played one night. It was really interesting. I started picking it up at 9, put the Oculus on, and I take it off, and it's 1 a.m., and I just don't know where the time went. I mean, clearly it went into the game, but it didn't feel like I was playing that long. It was such a good experience. And then I beat the game very recently after another, 5 or 6 hours of gameplay. And I've got to say, I'm not going to give any of the story away because the story isn't particularly the most amazing part. But I'll say that is most likely, for that type of game, as far as immersion, as far as gameplay mechanics, as far as genuine fun and connection with a game, that is the best and most genuine connection with a game that I've ever had in my life. And that is fantastic. As someone, I'm almost 30 now, and I've been playing games for a long time, and I've played a lot of games, not so competitively, but I mean, as far as immersive games, I've played a lot of the really big immersive games out there. And, you know, Metal Gear Solid, Witcher 3, Shadow of the Colossus, all these really big, great games that they pride themselves on either immersion, or, I guess, Call of Pripyat, Stalker, a bunch of these games pride themselves on being good games, but they only have a limited amount of immersion because you can only really interact with them with a controller or with a mouse and keyboard and a screen. With VR, it enhances that so much more, but the problem is it's sort of like, well, now what are you going to do with it? You've got all of this potential, but you know, you've got to combine that with good movement mechanics. Good, and it's still not perfect. Let me say that. You know, pressing the button to sort of pitch down and pitch up and rotate around, it wasn't so game breaking. And it would have been great if I had a full room setup, because then I could just turn all the way around and, you know, just worry about wherever the cable's at. I don't have that setup now, so maybe that's the next step. Maybe that's to take everything out of the room except literally a rug and a computer in the corner. But it was such a good experience. If you haven't picked up an Oculus and you're still thinking about maybe, you know, waiting a little bit, the technology's there. It's ready to go. For currently, I think it's $400. It'll probably be $500 very soon because the Summer of Rift sort of promotional thing is going away. But it's only going to be $500. This is now room scale. I think it actually is beating the Rift. I know it gained something like an 8% market share in a month, which is the largest single jump for a separate platform, a VR platform, in a month. It's really, really doing well. And I'm not saying the Vive is going to go away, though, oddly enough, HTC has been experiencing an extreme loss. I think something like $503 or $530-something million dollars last year of loss. And typically when companies do that, they figure out what they can cut. It's not that they're not losing money on VR. They're making money on VR, but they might get out of the VR game and consolidate a bunch of other things as well, just to sort of cut some of the fat, to trim some of that loss a little bit, some of that fat. So HTC might give up on the Vive, and someone else might buy it, and admittedly, that's sort of what happened with Facebook buying Oculus, but we don't know who's going to buy the Vive right now. And it might be just enough of a shuffle, enough of a juggling act to make you kind of choose the Oculus over the Vive. I'm sure it'll still be supported. Valve is pretty good about things like that. But most of the exclusives for the Vive are now, at some point compatible with the Oculus. So fantastic run in there. I also did get another program called Virtual Desktop. I'm not 100% on this one yet, but Virtual Desktop effectively allows you to interact with your desktop in while wearing the headset. It allows you to do things like watch 3D videos, side-by-side videos or over and under videos that you may have downloaded or acquired through completely legal means. It allows you to watch that in the headset. It allows you to interact with things in a really neat way. There's currently some issues with the Creators Update in Windows 10, but I'm sure they're going to patch and update that. And it was something like $8 because of the sale that Oculus was doing, so that was pretty cool. What ended on the 31st was the Destiny 2 beta. I got into that. I bought Destiny 2, got into the early access for the beta on PC, of course, and then the open beta came shortly after that, and I believe it closed September 1st or late August 31st, and I got to say, it looks really good. The content was very lacking. I wanted more. Of course, you always want more, and I don't want to have to wait till late October to get it, but I'm going to, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to be very happy whenever I get it, because it is just fantastic, the way the game looks. The way the game plays, the way the game feels on PC. I was a PS4 player for the longest time, and I really did like the game on PS4, and I wanted to get it on PS4 again so I can get it earlier, but I wanted to be able to get 60 frames per second. I don't really care about 4K. I'll probably play it 2K, you know, really high resolution, but not like 4K. That doesn't really make any sense for me. I don't have any hardware for it, and it looks good either way. But playing it and being able to play competitively a game, you know, I never played competitively on PS4 because I'm not really that great with a controller, but playing competitively with mouse and keyboard is such a joy. Friends that don't have PlayStation 4s but have had a decent rig for a long time are getting into it, and I may actually compete. I might actually get into a clan, might actually do raids and things like that, and have a consistent sort of, you know, I don't play WoW anymore, but have like a Destiny night instead of a WoW night, something like that. So pretty cool stuff there. And then, and this is sort of part of the the main segment, or I'll make it part of the main segment. I watched the latest Starship Troopers, Starship Troopers Traitor of Mars, the CG, the latest CG edition, fourth film in the series from Shinji Uramaki, written by one of the original writers of the screenplays for the first and the second, I believe the third one as well. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. We'll cut to two songs. This is Tabletop by Beefy and Power Core by Power Glove. I'll catch you after the break. I'm your host, MG, and this is the Experience Points Radio Show exclusively on Southeastern Zone 90.9 FM, KSLU. Welcome back to the Experience Points Radio Show on Southeastern Zone 90.9 FM KSLU. I'm your host, MG. You just heard Power Core by Power Glove. Before that, we opened it up with Tabletop by Beefy. Something I alluded to in the previous segment was that I watched the latest Starship Troopers movie, Starship Troopers Traitor of Mars. And, you know, I gotta say, it's always ridiculous watching a Starship Troopers movie. I have loved Starship Troopers ever since 97 when the movie came out. And I had read the book prior to that, but in 97, I think it was in junior high, maybe. So I wasn't able to, or maybe not even in junior high. Wow, no, 5, 4, 3, 7. Yeah, so I was maybe in like 5th or 6th grade. And I watched the movie, and I didn't fully understand it. Before that, I had read the book, and I didn't fully respect or understand that. I knew it was cool science fiction, but I didn't really know much about it at the time. Now, since then, I went into the military, and it is on the Commandant's reading list in the Marine Corps. I read it, and I had a greater understanding of it after going through training and going through things like that. And I rewatched the movie, and you know, I still think the 97 movie by Verhoeven holds up today. But something that I hadn't really gotten around my head around at the time was how different the movie and the books are. I mean, clearly there are gender changes and different plot points in the book from the movie. But even in the movie, Verhoeven just does a really, I guess, sneaky thing by going incredibly sort of satirical with a lot of it. And it's very straightforward when you know that it's there. It's super, super straightforward. It almost seems campy if you don't expect it or if you don't know. But I've watched all of the Starship Troopers movies, as well as even the direct-to-TV or the direct-to-DVD movies, and including the 30-minute or the 20-minute Roughneck Starship Trooper Chronicles animated or CG-based series that was going, I think, oh, I can't remember. I don't know. I'll pull it up and I'll figure out when it was actually rotating through, probably 99 to 2000. So, I mean, it was less than a year that it was open, but 36 episodes worth of a season. And I enjoyed all of them in their own way. I'm not going to say that they were good. The first one certainly was good, but the Roughneck Starship Trooper Chronicles was really good. The second Starship Trooper movie was kind of meh. It was actually really bad. Starship Troopers 3, Casper Van Diem came back and you know, kicked some butt. He was back again in Starship Troopers Invasion, which was directed by Shinji Uramaki, which is a famous director. And then he came back again, and that was a CG movie, so he voiced Colonel and then General, or I guess at the time it was General John Rico. And then the latest one, Traitor of Mars, also developed by Shinji Uramaki, who is famous for Captain Harlock, the new Captain Harlock, Appleseed, a lot of the Appleseed ones, not the original, but the 2004 remake, the 2007 Ex Machina edition. I thought he did Vexial as well, but I'm not seeing that. He was a designer on Wolf's Rain, Witch Hunter Robin, Scry, Digimon Tamers, Megazone 23, Genesis Climber, Mos Pita, Full Metal Alchemist. I mean, a ton of things to credit to this guy. Really, really awesome. But I finally watched The Traitor of Mars. It released the 22nd of August and is immediately available for download. And I think the Blu-ray is purchasable now. And I gotta say, it was kind of interesting. I wanted to kind of go through the Starship Troopers lore for people that haven't seen it. It's kind of a spoiler, but you know, I think it's interesting. So I'm gonna talk a little about Starship Troopers. So Starship Troopers, the book, was developed and written by Robert A. Heinlein in 1959, late 1959, and it's really good. It was written with a lot of military influences, and it had some big themes, right? Militarism, this coming of age theme, and then the overall moral decline after society in the 1950s, sort of where Heinlein grew up. It was really great. Won a ton of awards. One of the best known and most influential science fiction stories out there. And he's up there with Asimov and with Arthur C. Clarke as far as U.S. science fiction writers, U.S. Writers in general. And it's really great because science fiction militarism is super cool. They had power armor, they had starships, they had these big giant space stations, really, really cool things in the book, and it tells a really, really good story. Some people, though, are going to find that it's polarizing because of its political views, but it's supposed to be. That's the point. Now, fast forward to from 1959, December 1959, to November of 1997, when Paul Verhoeven, develops and produces, directs and makes, along with Edward Neumeier, the Starship Trooper movie, Starship Troopers 1. And this was, I love this movie. It's great. Slant Magazine, in 2012 ranked it number 20 of 100 best films of the 90s. And I feel like it's probably in a good place at number 20. I don't know that it could possibly be better than that. But it didn't do very good, very well in the box office. It only grossed $121.2 million, and it cost $105 to make. So it only made about $15 million profit, which probably, I mean, that's not very much. Though I would say now it's a cult following sort of movie. It's really, really good. It starred Casper Van Diem, Dina Meyer, Denise Richards, Jake Busey, yes, that Busey, and then Neil Patrick Harris, along with Michael Ironside, Patrick Muldoon, and his name's Clancy Brown. Yeah, the guy from Shawshank, the warden, as Zim. Really, really like that guy. But what Verhoeven did, he didn't appreciate Heinlein's sort of the Heinleinian society that he built. He thought that he would go full satirical, so it's actually really cool. He said, quote, when asked about, why would you use fascism or whatever, hyperbole and everything, he says, the movie is all about, quote, let's all go to war and let's all die. It was really, really cool to see these two sort of compared. You had Johnny Rico, who was a star football guy in his space high school or whatever, that joins the mobile infantry, which is sort of like this Army National Guard sort of space soldier force, purely because his romance in high school, Carmen Ibanez, is going to join. She's going to be sort of in the Air Force, more or less. She's going to pilot a starship, wants to be a starship captain. And Johnny Rico clearly isn't smart enough, so he goes ahead and he just becomes mobile infantry, while his classmate and sort of this person that's got a love interest, Dizzy Flores, goes ahead and does it as well, becomes mobile infantry to chase Rico. She's also sort of the hard-hitting, rough type of woman as well, tomboyish, very, very tomboyish. And then Carl, their friend Carl, who's actually Neil Patrick Harris, which is really great, becomes sort of this psychic person. He has this psychic ability. Now, in this Heinleinian society, and this sort of is framed this way for the rest of the movies, which is an extreme departure from the books. Well, I say extreme, most of the departure from the books. It's this society where if you want a piece of democracy, if you want to make any change to this sort of democracy, you have to make it through the federal government, the federal military. And it's this sort of worldwide federal thing that if you want to make a change in it, you have to serve in the military, you have to contribute to society. And that's a big weird topic, because definitely that's not what America is all about or whatever. But, you know, it played with a lot of these fascist sort of ideals where the federal government is, they're telling you things and there's propaganda, and all of the members of the officers in the military in this movie were wearing very Nazi-like sort of reminiscent Nazi clothing. It was very interesting. But anyway, Rico is very good at killing bugs. I guess that's the thing. I never said that because I got caught up. But there are these arachnid warriors, this bug race that is threatening to wipe out humanity. And the entire movie revolves around training for the destruction and killing of these arachnids, these bugs. And Rico is very good at being a mobile infantry person, eventually becomes an officer, and kills a bunch of bugs and has a lot of wins in this. Fast forward a little bit, we got Starship Troopers 2. That is, it's called Starship Troopers 2, Hero of the Federation. Doesn't have Johnny Rico in it at all. This is actually kind of weird. And if you're going to skip one, I would say skip this one. It was DVD and video in, what was it, 2004. And Not a good movie, in my opinion. Very, very, I mean, it's a direct-to-video sequel. They didn't have very many things in common, with the exception of it was written by Neumeier, which was, he also wrote the screenplay for the first one, and it was still produced by John Davis, who also produced the previous one. Now, the interesting thing is that this was directed by Phil Tippett, and Phil Tippett is very famous because he did a lot of, like, design work, creature design and stop motion. He's been in Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy, like 4, 5, and 6. Jurassic Park. He did a lot of work with RoboCop, which Verhoeven, Davis, and Neumeier actually worked on together. So Tippett's sort of a legend. It's interesting that he's directing a straight-to-DVD sequel of Starship Troopers. It seems like maybe he could have done something better than that. But it starred a bunch of relatively, you know, no-name or low-name type of actors and actresses, and tells a story about sort of this hunkered-down team that is stuck in an outpost that discovers a guy that apparently killed a commanding officer or something. They find out that it wasn't as black and white and clean-cut as the Federation said it was, and at the end, pretty much everybody dies except one person. The thing I remember, because I haven't watched this one in a while, probably since like 2004, 2005, but what I remember about this movie is that they try to bring back some of the success of the original Starship Troopers. They try to rekindle the fascism and rekindle the tongue-in-cheek satire and rekindle the over-the-top sort of FedNet broadcast. I think I played one right before the bumper at the beginning of the show. They rekindle that in such strange ways. Here's one from the very first Starship Troopers. Let's play a sound snippet of one of the FedNet broadcasts. Here's one right now.
Fully automatic burrito. Who wants to hold it?
Citizen rule. People making a better tomorrow.
There's just such a nice sort of sarcasm, just over the top, just propaganda. It's very propaganda-like, and I love it because I understand it, and it's great, and it's really good. I feel like if people don't understand it, then they're just like, wow, what was this guy trying to do? That was from the original movie. Number two didn't have any of that per se. Now, they did have that in Roughneck Starship Troopers, but that was more of a Saturday morning sort of cartoon thing. It was still CG, but it was a little different. In Starship Troopers 3, and this was specific, this was way better than number two, but it was the return of Casper Van Diem as Johnny Rico, who was a colonel stationed on Rokusan. It's an Angaran planet, and there's a Sky Marshal. The Sky Marshal is like this over-the-top, really ridiculous, larger-than-life. He's like a singer in a weird way. He visits, and Rokusan is attacked, and there's this big overall arching plot or whatever. Everyone blames Rico for it. He's sentenced to death, but then he is saved from death. He's fake his death or whatever, so that he can go on a rescue mission, because apparently the Sky Marshal has been kidnapped or has been going to this other planet. He's adopting religion. This is the first time I think that they actually bring religion into the series, which is I don't know why they do it. It's kind of, I don't know, it's weird. This is directed and now written and directed by Edward Neumeier, who also did the screenplay for number one, and I believe, as I said earlier, wrote the second one with Phil Tippett directing. At the end of this, though, and this came out in 2008, at the end of this, it was the Sky Marshal was eaten or destroyed or killed or whatever. The new Sky Marshal actually does embrace religion as something that is necessary for the Federation to continue. So they sort of they federalize religion and sort of make it trendy. And it's sort of, again, it's that satire. But I feel even now that they are just trying to ride the coattails of the success of the first movie. And this was when the movie wasn't very successful. So, or I guess this at this point, the movie was successful. At the time, it wasn't. This was distributed by Stage 6, who was also going to distribute, I believe, the next two movies, which was Starship Trooper Invasion and Starship Troopers Traitor of Mars. So, Starship Troopers Traitor of Mars was, Starship Troopers Invasion was a direct-to-DVD movie directed by Shinji Aramaki. It didn't have any of the original people in there, so the producer, the screenplay, all that stuff, completely different. It was distributed by Stage 6, produced by Stage 6, distributed by Sony. This came out in 2012, and it sort of takes it in a different direction. At the end of Marauder, Starship Troopers 3, Rico was promoted to general, and in Invasion, Rico is not immediately like the center point, but you guessed it, Casper Van Diem does come back to voice General Rico. There's a queen bug that attacks the John A. Warden, which is Carmen Ibanez's ship. Carl is still there from the first movie and sort of is kind of a weird character in this one. There's some cloak and dagger political sort of intrigue there. I say intrigue like there's some complexity to this movie. There really isn't. There's CGI boobies. I mean, it's just a big fight gun military movie. I still think it's just like the third one is trying to kind of ride the coattails of its predecessors, and it does an okay job. At the end, the John A. Warden is destroyed. It crashes on Earth, and there are a few notable things. Johnny Rico is sort of ashamed. He's demoted to colonel instead of general, and then we move on to the Traitor of Mars. So the first thing out of the gate on Traitor of Mars is that the demotion of from Invasion, we find out that Rico has sort of also been kicked to the curb as far as billets go, or as far as jobs go. He's now in charge of this Martian space station thing. He's sort of like training these Martian kids that are just really bad, like the worst possible recruits ever. He's training them. They're very, very bad at what their job is. It's sort of like he's babysitting them. And but anyway, bad stuff happens. There's this Martian propaganda, Martian like independence thing that sort of came over from Starship Troopers 3 and also sort of existed in Invasion just a little bit, not as much as it did in 3, but this peace, this independence came over from 3 into Traitor of Mars, and the Sky Marshal at the time, Amy Snap, is a Sky Marshal. She's very, very popular. She wants to be the most popular girl in school. She's very one-dimensional. Is having this really evil plan or whatever to destroy Mars. Carl is back along with Carmen. And for the first time, Casper Vivian does, come back as Johnny Rico, of course. But Dina Meyer actually comes back as Dizzy Flores. And Dizzy, the character, died in the very first Starship Troopers movie. So she actually comes back as sort of a phantom or a ghost or something. Because the movie's still at, like, very new, I'm not going to spoil this one. So hopefully this was given enough backstory into Starship Troopers. So I would say go and watch Starship Troopers 1, maybe 3, maybe Invasion, and then Traitor of Mars. If you watched 1, 3, Invasion, and then Traitor of Mars, you'd have the main story, because 2 is kind of not really worth it. And I would even say that Roughnecks isn't necessarily worth it. It's not bad, but they get a lot right, they get a lot wrong, they smash a lot of it together. None of it is going to compare to the books, though. The books are the book is fantastic. Rather, you wanna read the book if you get a chance. We're running out of time, so I'm gonna go ahead and cut to two songs, come back and end out the show. This is Heads Up, Hearts Down by I Fight Dragons, followed by Man on Fire by the Megas. This is the Experience Points Radio Show. I'm your host MG, and you've been listening to it exclusively on Southeastern Zone 90.9 FM KSLU.
Don't get out of line. Everything.